Good morning, everyone. An unmistakable degree of tragedy, of course, is what's going to hang over the talks down in Washington as the foreign policy team discusses the policy in Afghanistan today.
Certain, and complexity and
an unmistakable sense of ambiguity.
Absolutely.
About what the policy is, where does it go forward. The review of the Obama-Afghan policy takes place a day after the announcement that Richard Holbrooke has died, and some discussion that his last words, although we don't know exactly what they were, and it was reported yesterday that he expressed some frustration about ending the war in Afghanistan before he went into surgery and then never regained consciousness. At the very least, it would be understandable that frustration over the policy in Afghanistan would be very much on the mind of any diplomat, particularly one at his level.
Absolutely.
So it's actually fortuitous that we have with us this morning David Rode, who's the author of A Rope and a Prayer, A Kidnapping from Two Sides. The book was written with his wife, Kristen Mulvihill. It describes his, 7-month captivity with the Taliban inside Pakistan. First of all, David Rode, good morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I followed very carefully the many interviews you've done on your book tour, and it really seems to me the details of what you saw in captivity with the Taliban, of their ability to just sort of move and operate with impunity inside Pakistan, is at the center of what became Richard Holbrooke's frustrations over how to deal with Afghanistan and Pakistan. Do you see it that way?
Exactly. You're exactly right. And it was, I had many conversations with him about it since I returned home, and he was very frustrated with the policy and the situation in general.
And so while, you know, we can discuss what the actual quote was of what he said in his last words, it wouldn't be surprising for us to feel, at least, that this was very much on his mind, that perhaps there wasn't a clear way forward. And perhaps he was speaking maybe alone as the person advocating negotiations as opposed to a battlefield solution in Afghanistan. What's your assessment?
In just one thing, in terms of the quote, there was a correction the Washington Post ran. And what happened was he was apparently in a lot of pain before the surgery began, and they asked him to try to relax. It was a Pakistani surgeon that was operating on eventually, but he was speaking to a different surgeon, and they, you know, kept telling him to relax, and he, you know, jokingly said, you know, can you make the war in Afghanistan? And so these last words have been kind of, even the Washington Post has sort of admitted they overstated it. That said, he did support a negotiated solution. You know, and he was very frustrated with Pakistan, and he, you know, felt the power of the U.S. military and the policy process had grown. All of this was reflected, it's funny, in this policy he wrote as a young man, in a story he wrote for the Foreign Policy magazine in its first issue in December 1970.
Wow.
When he talked about this kind of, he also separately talked about this kind of unwieldy foreign policy apparatus in the government with too many layers and the NSC dominating things and state too weak. But he, he was frustrated. And my perspective is interesting because he was very effective in Bosnia, but not as effective in Afghanistan and Pakistan, both in terms of my personal cases and I think trying to, you know, achieve what the U.S. hoped in each region.
Well, he was certainly effective in getting you released from a brush with captivity and actual captivity that you had in the Balkans. So tell that story.
I was held for 10 days by Serbian forces, and it's in a way, it's the exact parallel to what exists in Afghanistan today, in that he pressured Serbian President Milosevic to get his proxies, which was Bosnian Serb forces led by Radovan Karadzic. They had arrested me, and they held me for 10 days. I had found mass graves that held Bosnian Muslims who had been executed around the town of Srebrenica. In the Dayton peace talks, he got Milosevic to lean on his proxies, and I was freed after only 10 days. When I was kidnapped in Afghanistan, I was quickly taken to Pakistan, and, you know, he vigorously talked to Pakistani military officials and said, you know, basically, I don't know what exactly was said, but lean on your proxies, i.e., Taliban groups that are allowed to operate in sanctuaries in Pakistan, and, you know, and release this journalist, and essentially the Pakistani military did nothing.
And I guess the picture that you describe there is of an Afghan and Pakistan leadership that sort of playing off this unwieldy foreign policy establishment against each other. You know, you talk to Petraeus today. Well, maybe we'll talk to another general tomorrow. Maybe it's McChrystal on Thursday. You tell a different story to a different person, and it's very, very easy to stall things on a kind of an open-ended basis. Do you think that's what's going on?
Yeah, and I mean, it's, I think the change of, you know, the comparison of the Bosnia, you know, basically 1995 versus 2010 is that the main thing, to be fair to Holbrooke, is that the Serbs were defeated, you know, in a very weak position militarily in 1995. The U.S. had armed the Croatian army. They had defeated Bosnian Serb forces and taken control of, you know, roughly like a third of the country that summer. And that situation doesn't exist in Afghanistan. And again, the big difference is the Bosnian Serbs didn't, you know, they didn't have a sanctuary they could openly use the way
right.
The Taliban have a sanctuary in Pakistan. But you're also correct. There's been a lot of complaints. You'll see some of the coverage of Holbrooke's death in the European press, that the U.S. has too many sort of chefs in the kitchen, and it is very unwieldy, and there's all these different messages from the different American envoys in the area.
Well, we want to continue this discussion a little bit, so let me just ask a fairly complicated question at the end here, and you can start your answer, and then we'll finish up. I mean, in that group of chefs, do the generals outnumber the diplomats in trying to construct some sort of a solution in Afghanistan?
The dominant player is the White House, but yes, the military has sort of tremendous say. And, you know, he wrote about this in 1970, and it's, you know, still true today. He also expressed frustration with the civilian side of the effort. I mean, one of his main legacies in Afghanistan was increasing the number of civilians, you know, to roughly 1,000 and trying to reinvigorate that. He wanted bolder diplomacy, bolder diplomats, you know, in 1970 and in 2010. So it's, but generally speaking, you know, the influence of the military, you know, did seem to have grown. But it's, the problem is I'm not sure the diplomacy would work without, again, sort of changing these facts on the ground militarily and having more pressure on the Taliban. It's going to be sort of a combination of the two.
Well, let's discuss when we come back what kinds of solutions are offered from the military side of the table versus what kinds of solutions are offered by this growing civilian operation that Richard Holbrooke, the late Richard Holbrooke now, was instrumental in building in Afghanistan. David Rode is our guest. He's the author of A Rope and a Prayer, A Kidnapping from Two Sides, discussing the situation in Afghanistan. Good morning, everyone. Continuing now with our discussion with David Rode, author of A Rope and a Prayer, A Kidnapping from Two Sides. He's a journalist with our partner, The New York Times. The book was written with his wife, Kristen Mulvihill, and describes his seven-month captivity with the Taliban. But we're talking this morning about the high-level policy review of the Afghan strategy going on at the White House this week. David Rode, you sort of suggested at the end of the last segment that the negotiator types are outnumbered by the generals in the policy sort of construction of what we're doing in Afghanistan. Do you see at the end of the day any way, whether it's the Pentagon or whether it's some negotiated settlement, of permanently degrading the capability of the Taliban either in Pakistan or in Afghanistan, no matter what we do?
I think the key is this is a regional dynamic that Holbrooke tried to address when he was appointed, and this is essentially the role of India. And what's happening is that Pakistan is backing the Taliban and allowing them to have these sanctuaries because they fear Indian encroachment into Afghanistan. They have the sense that India is trying to surround them. This was very clearly laid out, actually, in a WikiLeaks cable by the American ambassador at the time, Ann Patterson. And Holbrooke, if you remember, tried to get India to be part of his portfolio, and that was sort of blocked immediately by the Indians. And the problem, yes, there is this skew towards the military. The U.S. spends $100 billion a year on the American military effort in Afghanistan, you know, and roughly 10% of that amount on the aid effort. But it's the White House that can control this. You know, it's not completely runaway generals. We saw that with General McChrystal's firing.
Right.
And the White House has not embraced this regional approach. You know, President Obama visits India, and he doesn't sort of mention Pakistan, and it's the Pakistanis want, you know, to see, you know, the U.S. essentially telling India to back off, but that's not happening. And I would say the lack of a clear policy rests at the top.
Wow.
Part of it's structural, but it really is the White House that
really
has to make these decisions.
Interesting takeaway there from David Rode, author of A Rope and a Prayer, A Kidnapping from Two Sides, the book co-written with his wife, Kristen Mulvihill. David Rode, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We leave you now with the words of the late Richard Holbrooke talking about Afghanistan.
In the long run, foreign troops will leave Afghanistan. We don't want to occupy Afghanistan. We're here to help you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.